Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and joining me tonight is Stuart and Jess. How are the both of you doing?
Good to have some real baseball back. Also, just happy to talk about a good sports movie.
Yeah, I'm doing good, mate. I'm excited to get into it. I hadn't heard much about this movie prior to you dropping it in the Slack. So, yeah, excited to talk about it and glad to have watched it.
Well, let's do just that. Let's get into the movie and the episode itself. And there's a reason why the baseball crew is back together this week. Of course, the three of us did an episode on Moneyball 2 weeks ago as well. But this week, we're looking at another baseball movie, and that is 42. So 42 is a biographical sports film about Jackie Robinson, the first Black baseball player to play in Major League Baseball in the modern era. The title is a reference to Jackie's playing number on his jersey while he was playing for the Brooklyn Dodgers. The film begins with Brooklyn Dodgers owner Branch Rickey wanting to recruit a Black baseball player, to which sports reporter Wendell Smith suggests Jackie Robinson's name.
Well, what was he court-martialed for?
Wouldn't sit in the back of a military bus. Fort Hood, Texas. Driver asked him to move back. MPs had to take him off.
Well, yeah, you see?
I see he resents segregation. If he were white, he'd call that spirit. Robinson's a Methodist. I'm a Methodist. God's a Methodist. You can't go wrong. Find him. Bring him here.
Robinson's currently playing for the Kansas City Monarchs, a franchise of the Negro Leagues. Robinson earns a spot with the Montreal Royals, the AAA affiliate of the Brooklyn Dodgers system, and advances through his first season and spring training and eventually becomes a member of the Brooklyn Dodgers team themselves. Through hardship, adversity, pressure to perform from members of the public and the baseball community, Robinson continues to play his game and silences even the loudest voices who are indifferent at seeing a Black man playing baseball. But to Jackie's credit, he overcomes this, and well, the rest is history, as we will definitely get to soon. But I don't know about you guys, but I feel like we could talk about this movie scene by scene, just based on how good of a movie it is. Well, to me at least, I think it's one of the best baseball movies out there, and I think it's a movie that I will always love. But Stuart, Jess, what did you both think of the film? What did you like? What didn't you like?
So I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I just gave you guys a little anecdote off mic about how I thought it was a quaint independent film. Chadwick Boseman, Harrison Ford, plenty of others. I think Jess mentioned to me that it made almost $100 million at the box office as well. So it's definitely not that. I thought it was good. There's a few bits in there that, you know, needed to be in there, but didn't make it any easier to watch. One scene I'm thinking of when Jackie's just being racially abused while he's at bat by the opposition manager just went on a little bit too long for me. But I guess, you know, if that's how it's went down, that's how it went down. You know what I mean? So otherwise, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a bit interestingly paced and a bit long, but I'm also not saying that in a bad way. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think I said a little bit before about like what I liked about the film in terms of it just seemed a bit to be like a really sort of inspirational movie. There are a lot of great scenes there where it really showed sort of the toll that it took on Jackie to, you know, sort of, I don't know, I guess like see past all these sort of comments that were coming his way and that sort of thing. And I think that a lot of it just showed the faith of the Brooklyn Dodgers in recruiting and signing Jackie, especially as the first African-American to play in the MLB. And I think that as the movie sort of progressed, you saw a lot of the sort of things that, you know, Jackie sort of had to endure about being this person and sort of making his way into baseball at this high level. And I think that, yeah, I think the movie sort of did it well enough in terms of, you know, seeing or like having it played out in terms of all the comments and just sort of the reception that someone like Jackie would get, and being sort of like a trailblazer in the sport, I guess, as well. And yeah, I think that the progression of like his story was told really well. And you sort of saw people or other people sort of coming into their own in terms of sort of just having that bit of understanding about where Jackie was coming from and just the person that he is, and then just, you know, changing their sort of views as well.
I've got something to say about that. Like Jess said, it's an interestingly paced movie, and obviously it's condensed into just a little bit over 2 hours of film, right? So they can't have it all play out in real time kind of thing. But that's kind of something that's a little bit jarring for me. It's like the change in opinions of people are very swift. Like, you know, 1 second they're trying to get a trade and they don't want to play with Jackie, and then in the next scene they're like, you know what, man, you're all right, kind of thing. And I don't know, I think that's kind of a criticism that I have of the movie. Not the fact that they changed their opinion, I can't be clearer about that. That's fantastic, you know. But just touching back on the pacing of the movie, I just thought that some of it was a little bit stilted.
Yeah, I feel like a few of his teammates either needed some more scenes in the locker room or to be deepened as characters a bit more to understand their change in perspective rather than just he's good now.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that.
So we'll just touch on Jackie Robinson himself firstly. So he was born in Cairo, Georgia in the US on January 31, 1919, and he made his MLB debut for the Brooklyn Dodgers on April 15, 1947 in a career that spanned 9 years. He had a career batting average of .313. He hit 141 home runs. He had 761 RBIs as well. He was a 6-time All-Star. He was a World Series champion. He was a National League MVP, MLB Rookie of the Year, National League Batting Champion. He was a 2-time stolen base leader, which we saw, you know, just how good he was in stealing bases throughout the movie. But I think that the thing that really stands out, and obviously as a tie back to the title of the movie as well, is his jersey when he was at the Brooklyn Dodgers, 42. That jersey number has been retired, firstly by the Los Angeles Dodgers, and then second of all, retired by all MLB teams. And we'll get into sort of the significance of Jackie Robinson and sort of how he's sort of remembered and, you know, the commemoration of his name and sort of the legacy a bit later as well. But just in terms of like sort of how true the sport was or what references there were to history in the movie, I think that, yeah, so obviously it is a biographical film as well. So naturally you are going to have these things that are true to the movie, and you'll have these scenes that are true to the movie. And I believe that I saw something that did actually say that fundamentally the story is accurate. So I don't think that there was too many things that were sort of fully inaccurate. I mean, I did find some things that were that will go on a little bit, but I think in terms of like the storyline itself, or you know, how the story played out, I don't think that these inaccuracies really sort of played a major role in changing the story of Jackie Robinson. It was sort of stuff like the Dodgers' 1947 spring training being at Havana, Cuba, and not Panama, as it was shown in the film. It was sort of like Red Barber, who was the commentator that you saw quite a few times throughout the film, he wouldn't have broadcast Dodger away games from the opposing team's ballpark like he did in Philadelphia and Cincinnati, as shown in the film. Usually radio broadcasts of away games in this era were recreated back at the studio from a pitch-by-pitch summary that was transmitted over telegraph. But I think like the one scene that sort of did play a major part in the movie and the storytelling of the movie that didn't exactly happen was the scene of Jackie Robinson breaking his bat in the dugout tunnel when he got out a couple of times. And I think this was, like the sort of sequence that you were talking about where he was getting just harassed from the opposing team's manager. So like that breaking his bat scene didn't happen, but, and sort of the film consultants like on the day, they acknowledged that that didn't happen either. But they did sort of explain their justification for including the scene, saying that, the director, he felt that there was no way Robinson could have withstood all that abuse without cracking at least once, even if it was in private. So I feel like if they have that sort of justification, while it didn't happen in real life, I think that having that justification as to why they may have shot a scene like that and put it in the movie, I think really shows, you know, another element of what was going through Jackie's head in that moment and the sort of way that he was able to sort of withstand that or, you know, let his emotion out in terms of what he was feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially it being a lot older than the previous film, or sorry, the era of baseball being a lot older than the previous film we've talked about, I think you can get away with the occasional historical accuracy purely because there are less people around to correct you about it.
Yeah, I think when I was doing a bit of research, there was only two or three players from that team that was still alive when this movie was made, right? So that kind of just plays into, you know, what just saying about the historical inaccuracies. There's not people around. It's kind of easier to get away with. To your point about the commentator, some terrific voice acting by, is that John C. McKinley? Famously Dr. Cox in Scrubs. My goodness. Yeah, that was just fantastic. I was blown away by that every time he was on the screen.
Yeah, now I can picture it, you know, sort of where he's from too, because, and we'll obviously get into the actors and their performances a bit later as well. But, you know, in this movie, you had some actors where, you know them from something else and you wouldn't ever expect them to, you know, deliver a performance like this, I guess. And, you know, here's a prime example. And we'll get into like Chadwick Boseman a little bit too. Like, I feel like, you know, he obviously is well known for the Black Panther movies and the Avengers movies, but, you know, you don't sometimes think about like, you know, where, you know, they may have got their big break from and, you know, where they might have started from. But we'll just go into a little bit about the historical aspects a little bit more. And again, I don't think they're sort of fully hindered the storytelling, but in the film, Wendell Smith, who's the reporter, he's said to be the first Black member of the Baseball Writers Association of America. In reality, a person named Sam Lacey was the first. And much was made about Jackie Robinson's duel with Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher Fritz Ostermueller. He actually threw left-handed, not right-handed, as he did in the film. And the first inning that he pitched to Robinson, where he hit him with the ball, Robinson was actually struck on the left wrist, not in his head, and he claimed that it was a routine brushback pitch without racist intent. So obviously, because of that, like, there was no fight on the mound afterwards when it actually happened as well.
Deliberate. What I mean to say is, one of the slowest working pitchers in the game. Here's the windup, and... Oh, oh, he hit Jackie Robinson right in the head, and Jackie is down.
Hey! Ostermueller, you creep! You got a bat, too, don't you forget it!
Hey, I'm ready, you wild bastard!
Oh, yeah? Wild bastard? It's coming right between your eyes. I'm gonna come like a comic.
Hey, Jojo Belonga! Hey, Jojo Belonga!
But the climactic scene in which Robinson hit a home run to clinch the National League pennant for the Dodgers. That came in the top of the fourth inning of the game in real life. So obviously didn't secure the victory. It made the score 1-0, but the Dodgers eventually won that game 4-0. The Dodgers didn't win the pennant after that game. They achieved at least a tie for the pennant on that day before winning the pennant the next day. So again, I think that there are little things, but they don't play a major part in sort of changing the story completely.
They all seem like pretty minor things. Fritz, his last name, I'm not going to attempt to butcher, but I did a little bit of research, and you stole my factoid, mate. I was going to say about the left-hand, right-hand thing, but at least we got it out there.
So I think like the other thing to mention about history, or sort of like history that sort of stems from Jackie's story, and something that sort of the film sort of shows in terms of Jackie's legacy and the legacy that still stands today, is Jackie Robinson Day. And now this was held last week on the 15th of April. That is known as Jackie Robinson Day. So that is known as Jackie Robinson Day because that is the day that Jackie Robinson made his debut. So Jackie Robinson Day is a traditional event which occurs annually on April 15 in Major League Baseball. So it's celebrated at MLB ballparks on that one day. All players, coaches, and managers on both teams and the umpires, they all wear Robinson's uniform number of 42. So it was initiated for the first time on April 15, 2004, the festivity as a result of Robinson's memorable career, obviously best known for becoming the first Black Major League Baseball player of the modern era. Yeah, so I think that obviously his legacy is still continued today, obviously commemorated with this annual occasion where the whole of MLB gets in on this. They all, remember Jackie and the sort of things that he had to go through to become the first Black Major League Baseball player. And I think that a lot of people sort of understand the significance of that, which is why it's such a special occasion, this Jackie Robinson Day, where every team gets involved and, they all wear the same number of that 42. And it's obviously, the film sort of throws back to that aspect as well, where Pee-wee comes and talks to Jackie, and basically Pee-wee's like, one day we'll all wear 42 so that no one can tell us apart. And
thank you, Jack.
What are you thanking me for?
I got family out there from Louisville. I need them to know. I need them to know who I am.
Playing ball, huh?
Play ball!
Don't let him get to you!
Playing ball. Maybe tomorrow we'll all wear 42. That way they won't tell us apart.
I think that, that's always a scene that sort of like makes me tear up a bit, but it's sort of good to sort of reflect back on seeing that scene especially and understanding what MLB does in terms of all players wearing the number 42 and, just putting aside that difference.
Yeah, and I think especially that if you do a little bit of research, baseball does have a bit of history with the civil rights movement in the US and a bit of overlap between them. So I think especially in baseball, it's really good to commemorate those moments.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic thing that the MLB doesn't, the whole league gets involved. And, maybe we'll all wear 42 one day so no one can tell us apart. That's just that's a beautiful sentiment, And those words were said, 75 years ago now. And there's still a few people around that could probably, hear that and maybe take it on board. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, for sure. And we will move on to the acting performances of each of the characters now. And just to give you a little run through about each of the actors and the characters that they played. So we had Chadwick Boseman playing the title role of Jackie Robinson. We had Harrison Ford playing Branch Rickey, who's the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers. We had Christopher Maloney as Leo DeRocher. He was the manager of the Dodgers. And we had Andre Holland as Wendell Smith, the reporter. We had John McGinley as Red Barber, the commentator, and we had Lucas Black as Pee Wee Reese, who was the shortstop in the Brooklyn Dodgers team. So was there anyone that you guys wanted to focus on? We sort of touched on a bit about how each actor sort of brought these characters to life and told a really true story about in terms of their depiction and sort of how the actor sort of played the character. But Stuart, we might start with you. Is there anyone that you sort of want to single out in terms of their performances, or, you know, look at it a bit more as a whole?
So there are a couple of performances I'd like to single out. I think Harrison Ford kind of he tread the line of you know, a tremendous performance and kind of playing a caricature of the person you're supposed to be. I mentioned to you guys before, there was something off about his face. His voice was weird. It was some uncanny valley shit going on. Like I just couldn't quite put my finger on what was different about him. But I guess it's pretty subjective if you think that's a terrific performance or if you think it's a bit on the nose or whatever. I think I kind of tread the line there. I mentioned John C. McGinley as the commentator, just blew me away. That voice, that accent that he did, I don't know how to place that. I don't know what it is, but I love it and I need more of it in my life. Chadwick Boseman looked about 14 years old compared to what I'm used to seeing on the Avengers and stuff. You know, he looked real young, but I thought he was great. The Law and Order guy, I know you said his name just now, but I can't remember what it was. Yeah, he was an interesting one. He's one of those guys that, you know, you see in a movie and he's always the guy from Law and Order, you know? Like, as soon as you lay eyes on him, you're like, oh, I know, you're that Law and Order guy, you know? So I thought he was right. He did his thing. But I think I wanted to highlight the Harrison Ford thing. Chadwick Boseman was great. And John C. McGinley, beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the late Chadwick Boseman was a great actor in all of his films, but especially this was a really good performance, and you can see how this became his breakout film. And I think also, yeah, commentary and radio is a really important part in baseball storytelling from that era because it's how games are broadcast. And so you need to really use that to set scene. And I think John C. McGinley as Red Barber does a really good job of bringing that to make it feel like a baseball broadcast, not a movie showing baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, we touched on Chadwick Boseman and sort of this being, you know, possibly, you know, the movie that sort of puts his name in the spotlight. This was only his third sort of feature film that he appeared in. So the first film that he was appeared in was made in or released in 2008. The second one was in 2012, and then obviously 42 was released in 2013. So yeah, I think that he was relatively new to like film roles, really big film roles, and obviously this was 3 years before his first appearance in an Avengers movie, which was Captain America Civil War as well. And I think that, yeah, there's just like, I don't know if there's such a big difference in terms of his role as Jackie Robinson and then as Black Panther or anything like that. I think that, yeah, you really do need to sort of single out the role. And I think that that's like really important for an actor and especially for Chadwick Boseman, that you can sort of not sort of like pigeonhole them into one, you know, one sort of character or one sort of movie. And so I think that, yeah, you know, Chadwick Boseman will be, or is really remembered for being Jackie Robinson in this movie as well. Yeah, I think that his role in the movie as Jackie Robinson was really good. I think that you obviously saw so much of that emotion that, and he sort of conveyed that emotion that you just know Jackie would have felt that way as well back in the day when he was, you know, playing and all this sort of stuff. So I think that, you know, from seeing Chadwick's performance as Jackie Robinson, I think that you got a really good insight, you know, through his acting about the type of person that Jackie was, whether that was him as a husband, as a father, as a baseball player. And so I think that, yeah, Chadwick Boseman did that really well. But I probably do want to highlight Harrison Ford a bit more as well. Obviously, yeah, as Branch Rickey. And I think that he sort of probably had a lot of those moments where obviously he was one of those first people that were really instrumental in getting someone like Jackie into the team and sort of, you know, sort of changing the landscape of baseball and in terms of like integrating sort of like, you know, Black players into the MLB and sort of inviting them to join and inviting them to play and all this sort of stuff. And so I think that because sort of him and his character was so instrumental in that, I think that it led to, you know, Rickey sort of having a lot more of those moments where he was able to like speak from the heart. He was able to like go a bit more in depth. He was able to be a bit more inspirational because he had a clear focus about sort of the way that he wanted, you know, Jackie to be treated and just the sort of opportunities that he wanted to sort of present to Jackie. And I think that Harrison Ford really did that well because, you know, there are a lot of different speeches that Jackie, that Harrison Ford delivered throughout this movie to all different people, you know, Jackie included, trying to make them sort of see eye to eye about where Rickey sort of wanted to take this in terms of the acceptance of Jackie Robinson playing baseball for a major MLB organization.
His name is Jackie Robinson, by the way.
Yeah, Branch, I understand he's got a name, but we're just not ready for that sort of thing here in Philadelphia. Now, I'm afraid that we're not going to be able to take the field against your team if that boy's in uniform.
Well, what you do with your team is your decision, Herb. But my team's going to be in Philadelphia tomorrow with Robinson. And if we have to claim the game as a forfeit, so be it. That's 9-0, in case you forgot.
You know what, Branch? You've had a hell of a hair across your ass over this for a long time, and I'd like to know what it is you think you're trying to prove.
You think God likes baseball, Herb?
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
It means someday you're going to meet God, and when he inquires as why you didn't take the field against Robinson in Philadelphia, and you answer that it's because he was a Negro, it may not be a sufficient reply.
I'm sorry. That's a really important moment in baseball history, and I think it was captured well.
Definitely. I mean, outside of the aesthetic of the Harrison Ford performance, I think the character and you know the things he had to say and the fact that he was a real person in the world in the late 40s in the United States, I think the world's a better place.
So we've spoken about the actors and their portrayal of the characters, but I'll ask if there was any sort of relatable character in the film that, you know, you guys saw yourself gravitating towards, whether it was a character as a whole or whether it was small parts about a character. You know, was there any aspects of a character that was relatable to you? Jess, we might start with you for this one.
I think there's an element of every character that you somewhat sympathise towards, and I sort of somewhat sympathise, especially with the Harrison Ford character of trying to, I don't hope I say I'm someone who tries to do what the good thing, even in a tough situation.
I don't know if I really relate to any of these characters, but there was a scene that kind of spoke to me. Is it Wendell? The reporter's name is Wendell. Has to take Jackie out of the house they're staying in because, you know, there's a group of people coming and they're sitting in the car, and then there's the scene where Wendell has to speed off around the car and, you know, Jackie's like, what the hell is going on? And then he tells him the situation and then he starts laughing. He goes, oh, I thought you were getting me out of here because I've been cut. That scene there, I feel like I've been Jackie in that situation, obviously at very different levels, at many different times during my life. So that particular scene spoke to me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that there are certain aspects of each character that you sort of might relate to instead of actually relating to a character fully. I think for me, yeah, similar to Jess in terms of Branch, Ricky, just in terms of like doing the right thing, wanting to make an environment or a sport a sort of like better place and more inclusive place, and just being a lot very welcoming in terms of, you know, inviting others to sort of join and sort of get others on board, that sort of thing. I think that's it for me. Obviously saw myself gravitating towards Red Barber, the commentator. That'd be awesome to do, commentate, you know, MLB games especially, you know. I think that some of like his commentary, like, you know, you included like the little sort of like quips and stuff like that, and like the sort of analogies and metaphors and all this sort of stuff. So I think that, you know, it sort of became that bit more colourful in terms of like being a bit more playful and all this sort of stuff, and could have a bit of fun with the commentary. So I liked that part of the movie as well. And just like, yeah, as you know, you sort of touched on John C. McKinley's portrayal of the commentator as well. But yeah, in terms of like relatability, like I feel like that would be a really good job to have. And so if I sort of saw myself doing that down the line, you know, I feel like, yeah, sort of any commentator that I see on the screen, it's like, you know, that's, you know, not who I want to like base it off or anything like that, but I know that I can like sort of go back and have a look. So we've obviously talked about the historical aspects of the movie, but we'll touch on briefly about how we saw the sport actually being played throughout the movie. And I know that on the episode of Moneyball 2 weeks ago, we sort of touched on this as well, but I think that there are a lot of different scenes in terms of having the camera positioned certain ways that sort of were different to Moneyball. So we'll just touch on those a little bit as well. Yeah, so I think that what 42 did really well in sort of utilizing on using these smaller venues to play the game of baseball, you know, it sort of differed really a lot in terms of if you looked at something like Moneyball, like we did a couple of weeks ago, just because Oakland Coliseum, it's just like this vast sort of expansive like backdrop. But then you look at the stadiums that we used in 42, I feel like the sort of like camera angles and like how you could be a lot more up close and in terms of like the sort of field being a lot closer to the stands and all this sort of stuff, I think that it really allowed for the movie to be a lot more sort of like personal, and you felt a lot more connected to the characters as well, because you could have like all the sort of elements in front of you. You know, you could see everything clearly and in frame, and everything just looked like real close, real tight. And I think that that really helped the story, or like showing the characters and the story, and, you know, actually seeing what was happening in terms of, yeah, just what was happening in the scene. But I think that in terms of like the camera angles that they used on particular sort of like pitches and batters and all that sort of stuff, I think that there seemed like there was a lot of work going into it, because, you know, the amount of cuts that they did between the pitcher and then Jackie's trying to steal bases and then having a shot of the batter in the box as well and all this sort of stuff. I think that, yeah, I think that the fact that they were able to change so, you know, easily and effortlessly, I think really showed just how much the sort of like camera angles sort of reflect what you see nowadays as well. And I think that, yeah, those sort of like close-ups and that sort of focus on a particular person really helped in terms of, you know, just, yeah, I guess feeling a bit more connected to the character and, you know, what was being played out.
I think the other advantage that they had was, because it's 1940s baseball, they get a bit more leeway for it looking a bit less like what we're used to, as opposed to 2002, where a large proportion of your audience will have memory of watching baseball in 2002 for the A's.
Yep.
Here, that season was not even broadcast other than the World Series. At that point in time, this was the first World Series broadcast. There'd been a couple of broadcasts as proof of concepts, but regular televised baseball didn't exist back then, so there's a lot less footage of what it looked like.
I think your last bit there that you said, Jason, was spot on. It just you had more of an idea of what was going on an interpersonal level between the players on the pitch when you compare it to something like Moneyball, just the way it was shot and stuff, and you know, the little conversations, and like you mentioned, Jackie stealing the bases and going over to the pitcher and seeing what the catcher's thinking about it and all the rest of it. I enjoyed the baseball scenes in this movie more than I enjoyed the baseball scenes in Moneyball. It felt more, I don't know how to put it. It felt, I guess, you know, it felt more like a movie, whereas in Moneyball, we spoke about on the Moneyball episode, it was real footage spliced in with some acted stuff. Whereas this one, it felt more like part of the movie, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And I think my help with that as well was that I think in Moneyball, it was a lot more about the actual game, whereas here it was a lot more about specific moments and conversations within the game.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that, like, the camera angles, in terms of, like, getting a bigger picture, I think that it was, going back, saying that, going back to my point before about it being a smaller venue, you know, you can see a lot more, you can get a lot more in a shot. And so there are multiple shots where, you know, it's sort of filmed from a bit of an angle, sort of like maybe the edge of the dugout or something like that. And you had like the home plate on the left-hand side, you had the pitcher in frame on the right-hand side, you had the crowd behind you, you had the home run fence, you know, in the background as well. And I think that in, especially like in one of those final scenes where Jackie hits that home run, I think that that camera angle is really important because you see the whole sequence of events in sort of one go. You know, you saw the pitch come in, you saw Jackie swing it, you saw the ball trail away and, you know, go over the fence for the home run.
Give me something. Give me something I can hit.
You want it?
What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
Austin Mueller looking in for the sign.
Be careful what you ask for, boy.
And here comes the pitch.
And I think that in other baseball movies, like, they might focus more on the smaller aspects, or, like, you know, they might focus on the ball being pitched and then the ball traveling to the batter and then focusing on the batter swinging and then the contact of the ball and all this sort of stuff. But I think that what 42 did really well is that, like, they showed everything sort of at once. So they didn't need to be that cutaway when it wasn't sort of necessary, I guess. And, like, that's how I saw it.
Absolutely.
All right, we come to the part of the episode now where we ask the question, if you could have a baseball-related movie get made, what would it be and what are your reasonings for wanting it to be? So I hope that both of you have had a little bit of a think about this. And, obviously it was only 2 weeks ago that we last asked this question. So hopefully you have some other baseball-related movie ideas. Stuart, we might start with you for this one.
Okay, I will be real with you guys, man. I forgot about this question. I got lampooned last time around from a few buddies that listened to the podcast that said, come on, Stewie, Major League 3, you're kidding me. Get something real out there. And then I thought I kind of saved myself on the club last week when I said about the inception of the Adelaide Crows. I thought that was a really good one. And I've dropped the ball again. It's baseball and I've dropped the ball again. I knew this was coming up just in the last 30 seconds. So this is just kind of off the dome. So I'm going to go with another outlandish sequel. I'm going to go Field of Dreams 2. This time the baseball players come back as zombies and Ray and the family have to defend the farm from zombies. Field of Dreams 2, The Deadening. That's the one for me.
Look, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't want that movie to be made. So...
yes, save the podcast, man. Can you save the podcast for us? Because I've just ruined it with that one.
If we're going sequels, I'd go A League of Their Own too. But if you're going to a new story that hasn't been told, I think Henry Aaron was a really interesting story, similar vein, but also that combination of both what he's meant for baseball and for the civil rights movement, especially with his recent passing, was it 2 years ago?
Fantastic suggestion. Jess, you have saved this segment single-handedly.
All right. Well, my idea for this particular segment is to look at the MLB All-Star Game. So it's an annual professional baseball game sanctioned by the MLB and contested between the All-Star players from the American League and the National League, selected by the fans. The fans select the starting fielders, the managers select the pitchers, and managers and players for the reserve pool as well. I think that this would be a really cool concept to sort of understand sort of where the first MLB All-Star game sort of originated from. So the first one was in 1933 as well. And in the beginning, like, baseball teams put on benefit games for families of players who had died unexpectedly. Obviously, you know, back in that time period as well, you know, you had a couple of wars going on and all that sort of stuff. And so the first All-Star game was held on July 6, 1933 in Chicago. As part of the 1933 World Fair. And it was originally intended to be a one-time event, but its success resulted in making the contest an annual one. And so I think that it would just be really cool to sort of know and understand, you know, where it sort of originated from, the idea itself, and then just seeing that success of the first one when it was intended to be a one-time event and seeing the success that it still holds today and sort of, you know, the progression of the event itself today.
Fantastic idea for a doco as well. I think, you know, I don't know if that exists already or whatever, but I think it'd make a great movie and it would also make a great documentary too.
All right. Well, we have unfortunately come to the end of the episode now. So Stuart, Jess, would you like to share your social media handles?
So you can follow me on Twitter at _JessicaRoss. That is JessicaRoss. And you can also see me. I do a weekly podcast on Edge of the Crowd called Mates of Origin, where we discuss all things rugby league. And that is Mates of Origin on Twitter.
You can find me at StewieIsSickOfIt on Twitter, just as it sounds. We can drop in the episode notes or something, I'm sure. Also, soon to come to the Edge of the Crowd podcast network after Extra Time, the place to get the big names, the big games, and the big news from the world of football, aka soccer, to the unwashed. So you can find me there at @AfterET_podcast.
And you can find me on both Twitter and Instagram at Jase Erbs. That's at JaseErvs. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film at Goals on Film Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube at Edge of the Crowd. You can also view any of our stories, be it sport, culture, a bit of election news as it comes up soon as well, at www.edgeofthecrowd.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.